this deepening session on the significance of history to the study of the Baha'i Faith is presented by Dr. Firuz Kazemzadeh, Chairman of the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of the United States and Professor of History at Yale University. Dr. Kazemzadeh.
Tonight I would like to talk to you about the significance of history. Many people have a real dislike for the study of history, perhaps because of the way that history was taught them in school. Frequently, in school, history is taught as nothing more than names and dates. And people who are exposed early in life to this kind of history tend to dislike it forever after. Then there are those who do not believe that history has any relevance today. They would say, well, why should I bother to learn about Napoleon or Peter the Great? What do I care about Julius Caesar? Indeed, some people even don't want to know about the most recent history. Some of them don't want even to know about the Second World War. Perhaps the most succinct statement of a negative attitude toward history was pronounced by Henry Ford, who is reported to have said that history is bunk. And yet, history is one of the basic elements of the intellectual and the spiritual life of mankind. Indeed, history pervades our entire existence. All we have to do is walk up and down the streets of our cities, and everywhere we will see evidences of history. There are statues and monuments to famous men of the past. There are architectural styles that we cannot miss. There are memorial buildings. But even beyond, even in our own homes, there are evidences of history. For instance, our family picture albums are an evidence of history. These are historical documents, in fact. The keeping of old letters, the keeping of souvenirs, again, is engaging in history. Not to speak of books, which the moment that they are written become part of our historical record. History can also be termed the collective memory of mankind. Just imagine an individual, a human being, who lost his memory. We say that he has amnesia. And the person with amnesia, of course, is in grave trouble. Suppose a man leaves his home in the morning on his way to work, and after he walks two or three blocks, he gets total amnesia. Obviously, he will not reach his place of work. If he forgets his past, if he forgets who he was, he will also forget where he worked. So he will never get to his place of work, nor will he be able to return to his home. Something of the same thing occurs with a society that forgets its history. Moreover, without a sense of the past, the present is totally meaningless. Contrary to the opinion of some people, the present, the now, only becomes meaningful in terms of the past and also in terms of the future. And the future could be called inverse history. In fact, the now, the present moment, does not really exist at all. The moment you have become aware of now, that moment has become past, has become history. Now, all the great religions of mankind, all the great religions of the past, have had a very strong and a very vivid sense of history. Way back in primitive times, in ancient times, history and religion were one. Take a look, for instance, at the Old Testament. Now, in the Old Testament, there is an indiscriminate mixing of history, poetry, and divine commandments. It's very difficult to say where history ends and the law begins. But it would not be an exaggeration to say that most of the Old Testament is history. In fact, the Genesis begins with the story of creation, and that is a kind of universal history, not just the history of mankind, but the history of heaven and earth, the history of the universe as such. And then, of course, with Adam, human history begins, and God himself, as you can clearly see, participates continuously in this history of mankind. So one can say that before history, there really is nothing. Before history, there is no humanity, and the people that is not aware of its history is not fully human. As far as I know, there is no society, nor ever was a society on the face of the earth, that did not have a concern, a very deep concern, for its past. Now, to the Jews, all history was sacred, because Jehovah, because God himself, acted in history, because the will of God was historically revealed. God was the author of history, and God was a constant participant in history. Again, look at the Old Testament. The creation of Adam, the expulsion of Adam from paradise, the appearance or the voice of God speaking to Abraham, the appearance of God in the burning bush at the time of Moses, and all the events, all the various events in the history of Israel manifest God, manifest the divine presence in the history of the Jewish people. Therefore, the relationship of man and God, the covenant between man and God, could only be understood in a proper historical context. Now, Christianity was a religion which stemmed from Judaism, and it inherited from Judaism many of its essential attitudes. Christianity, again, shared with Judaism this feeling for the importance, for the paramount importance of history. Indeed, if Jesus was the Messiah promised to the chosen people, his claim, that is, the claim of Jesus to the Messiahship, had to be validated by the past. The promise was a part of history. The life of Jesus also was a part of history. The life of Jesus was extremely important to the Christians, as important, or even perhaps more important, than his teachings. The Christians felt that Jesus was manifesting the qualities of God, and sometimes later they even confused him with God. But still, because the life of Jesus was so important, because the person of Jesus was so important to the Christians, that life had to be remembered, recorded, and transmitted. And so the Christians very early began to write their own history. Again, the four canonical Gospels are essentially history. There is more history there than there is reporting of the teachings of Christ. Like the Jews, Christians believed that the story of man, that is to say, human history, had begun with Adam and would result in the kingdom of God on earth. You see here once again, just as in the case of Judaism, that God was manifesting himself in history. Like its great predecessors, Islam was also a deeply historical religion. Muhammad spoke clearly of the ancient covenant of God with man and of himself as the latest of a long succession of prophets. The past was important to the Muslims, just as important as the future, since Adam, Abraham, Moses, and Jesus belonged to the past, and of course so would Muhammad for the generations which would come after him. After Muhammad's death, stories of his life and his sayings were compiled and transmitted as traditions from generation to generation, and these also carried a great weight because the life of the Prophet and his actions were considered to be a guide which would help the Muslims to achieve a better, more just, and more holy life. Like Judaism and Christianity, Islam was concerned with the future as well as the past. And for 1,000 years, Muslims, especially the Shiite Muslims, expected the coming of the Qa'im, him who arises, and the culmination of religion. But this messianic expectation was only possible on the basis of a sense, of a very vivid, very real sense of the historical process. To us Baha'is, history is just as important as it was for the Jews, the Christians, or the Muslims. Perhaps even more important. The biblical record was very imperfect. We know so little about Moses, and only a little bit more about Jesus. Even Islam, which is 1,300 years old, lost much of its record over the years. The Baha'i faith is literally the only world religion which was born in the full glare of history. While the Bab and Baha'u'llah were still living, historians were recording the events associated with their ministry. Not only Baha'i historians, but non-Baha'is as well. For instance, there was the Frenchman, Comte de Gobineau, who was in Persia in the 1850s, shortly after the martyrdom of the Bab. He talked to many people who had participated in the events that transpired in the brief period from 1844, when the Bab declared his mission, and 1850, when he was martyred. Moreover, Persian court historians, who of course were not sympathetic to the faith, who were in a certain sense its enemies, still recorded many of these events. But even more significant, Baha'u'llah himself has indicated the importance of preserving the history of the faith, and in fact, he was himself to some degree an historian. Look, for instance, at the epistle to the Son of the Wolf, one of the very important writings of Baha'u'llah. This book is significant for many, many reasons, but let me now point out only a few. In the first place, this was the last major work from the pen of Baha'u'llah. It was written in 1890, only 2 years before his ascension. The Epistle to the Son of the Wolf is Baha'u'llah's own summary of the Baha'i faith. Baha'u'llah sums up, brings together, that which he himself considered to be the most important elements of the faith of which he was the author. As you read this book, you can't help noticing how much of it is historical. Baha'u'llah tells about episodes in his own life. He dwells upon his own imprisonment and exile, on his own sufferings and the sufferings of his disciples. Because he was a manifestation of God, his arrests, his exile, his sufferings, and the sufferings of his disciples were invested with supreme significance. He was the manifestation of God on earth, and the disciples were the witnesses. Such events obviously cannot be forgotten. They obviously mean a great deal to all mankind. You can also see how important Baha'i history is when you remember that Abdu'l-Bahá himself devoted some time to the writing of history. In fact, he produced a little book called The Traveler's Narrative, which is a brief, lucid, quintessential history of the faith. This work was given by Abdu'l-Bahá to Professor Edward G. Brown of Cambridge University during Brown's visit to Acre in 1890. Brown, when he received the manuscript, was not told who the author was. He translated the book into English and published it at the Cambridge University Press, both in the original Persian and in translation. But the very fact that Abdu'l-Bahá, whose life was so full, whose duties were so varied, who certainly did not have time for trivialities, did produce a book of history, did dedicate himself to the writing of history. And later, Shoghi Effendi, busy as he was directing the cause, interpreting the sacred writings, administering the world center of the faith, Shoghi Effendi too found it necessary to devote a major portion of his precious time to the production of history. Just think how deep and how constant his interest in history was. He always encouraged the friends to study the history of the faith, individually and in classes, in their own homes and at summer schools. But that wasn't all. Shoghi Effendi not only encouraged us Baha'is to study history, he became a historian himself. First of all, he translated and annotated the first volume of Nabil's history, The Dawnbreakers. Take this magnificent book off the shelf and leaf through it. Look at the footnotes. Read the preface, and you will very quickly realize what effort Shoghi Effendi invested in this book, so that the English-speaking Baha'is may have access to the heroic age of our faith. In 1844, the 100th anniversary of the cause, Shoghi Effendi gave us his own history of the faith, God Passes By. To the Persian Baha'is, in the same year, he sent another work dealing with history, Lohe Qarn, or The Tablet of the Century. But even that was not all. Shoghi Effendi wanted the Baha'is to place the history of the faith in its broadest context. We must know not only what happened within the Baha'i community, we also must know what happened to the world as a result of the appearance of the new manifestation. We must know how mankind at large and the leaders of mankind interacted with the manifestation and with the community which followed him. This was precisely the task that Shoghi Effendi performed in another remarkable book the promised day is come. In this book, you will find an analysis of the past, an interpretation of the writings, and a vision of the future. Indeed, the promised day is come demonstrates that past, present, and future are inseparable, and that they must be viewed together if we are to understand ourselves and our place in the universe. Let us think a little bit further about the importance of Baha'i history. Undoubtedly, the first and the foremost thing about Baha'i history is that that history includes the record of the life and times of the manifestation himself. Now, with a philosopher, with an artist, with a musician, with a novelist, it is possible to separate the product from the producer. It is possible to separate Michelangelo from the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. It is possible to separate Tolstoy from War and Peace. It is possible, indeed, it is extremely easy to separate Beethoven from his symphonies. But it is impossible to separate the manifestation of God from his teachings. It is impossible to separate the person of Jesus from his teachings, because the person itself was part of the religion of God. And the same, of course, is true of Moses, whose leadership and the inspiration which he provided were just as important to the Jews as the commandments that he brought. And the same was true of Zoroaster, the same was true of Buddha, who by their example did just as much for their people as they did by their teachings. Second, the history of the faith is a record of man's response to the manifestation. We are very much concerned with man's response to the manifestation, because this is the point at which we as individuals come in. We must know about the faith and the devotion of the believers, of the disciples who followed the Bab and Baha'u'llah. We must know about the sacrifices that these early Baha'is so willingly made for the cause. But we also must know about the scorn of the powerful for the Baha'i faith. We must know about the hatred that the clergy had for the Bab and for Baha'u'llah. We also learn a lesson from our knowledge of the indifference of the mass of mankind. It was during the first century, the heroic century of the Baha'i faith, that the first Baha'i lives were shaped. The first effects of this new faith of God, the first effects that the manifestation had, it had on the people of that very first century. And it was our first century that produced the greatest number of saints and heroes. Again, we simply must know their lives, we must be familiar with their stories, because each one of these lives and each one of the stories contains elements that can inspire us, that can lead and guide us. Take, for instance, our heroes. Take Mullah Hussein Boshru'i, the Babul Bab, the gate of the gate, the first to believe in the Bab. Now, what could be more inspiring than the story of Mullah Hussein Boshru'i? The story of his search for the Bab and of how he finally found the Bab in Shiraz and then was immediately sent by the Bab on another mission of search, the mission which took him to Tehran and finally to the presence of Baha'u'llah. Or the story of Tahereh Qurratul Ayn, the Baha'i or the Babi poetess who had played such an important role in teaching the faith, promulgating and spreading the faith, and became the greatest woman heroine of this dispensation. Or take someone like Quddus, who was still a teenager when he met the Bab and became his disciple, and who behaved with such great heroism, selflessness, and devotion. Or Hujjat of Zanjan, the great divine, who not only became a disciple of the Bab himself, but led perhaps a quarter of the population of his town into the Babi faith, and then became the rallying point, the center for the Babi movement in northern Persia. Or think of the martyrs of Tehran, or think of the king of the martyrs and the beloved of the martyrs in Isfahan, about their bravery, about the purity of their motives. Or think of Sayyid Ashraf and his mother. Think of Badi, the young boy who sacrificed his life in order to deliver a message of Baha'u'llah to the Shah. Each one of these individuals manifested certain qualities that are precious to us. Each one of these men or women manifested a devotion and a dedication which explains, actually, the success of the progress of the faith. Without these men, without their sacrifices, without the blood of the martyrs, the faith would not have spread to all the corners of the earth. Today, when many of our problems are similar, when we still carry on the spreading of the faith, we can derive a great deal of inspiration, important lessons indeed, from this glorious past. At the end of the heroic age of the Baha'i faith stands the majestic, the beautiful figure of Abdul Baha, the center of the covenant, the perfect exemplar of Baha'u'llah's teachings. No other man has or ever will embody so completely the essence of the Baha'i faith. Knowledge of his life is indispensable for the development of proper Baha'i attitudes and the building of truly Baha'i character.